Welcome to Dr. Drew Podcast. Again, all the usual thank yous, and please participate so we can keep the wins in the sails of the Corolla pirate ship. Do sign up at drdrew.com on the contact list. I've got some great stuff there about the opiate addiction, the opiate crisis. I cannot recommend that series strongly enough, but I want to get right to my guest. Today, I'm delighted and privileged to welcome Barbara and Nicole Boxer. Their podcast is Fight Back, with Barbara Boxer and Nicole Boxer, right? You guys are doing it together?
We are. Mother-daughter.
The Twitter handles are at Barbara Boxer and at Nicole Boxer. And if you're, I don't know, if you've had your head in the sand, you might not know who Barbara Boxer is. But if you're from California, even if you had your head in the sand, you would know who she was. So she, of course, served for a long time in the House, and she was a U.S. Senator for California, 1993 to 2017. And I'd forgotten you were part of the vice chair of the Ethics Committee. Until recently, was that true?
Well, I headed the Ethics Committee when Democrats were in charge, and then I was vice chair. It's the only committee that's 3-3 tie. So you have to get along or you don't get anything done.
And I was just thinking, I think you got out just the right time. It's like to be in the Ethics Committee now.
It was pretty juicy then, Drew.
It was juicy, yeah, but now it would be mind-boggling, right? And so frustrating. Yeah, right.
But I think I got to hear some of the juicy bits, even though I was probably the only person that could actually, on occasion, hear. I was sworn to secrecy, though, right?
Can you talk about it now?
Not now. Well, yeah.
Wait. I want to get clear on this. She can? You can talk about it?
I've been given the go-ahead.
Yeah. Is there anything? What pops in your head when you think about that?
I mean, the first thing that comes into mind is Bob Packwood, obviously.
Yeah.
Tell everybody who he was, because he's been gone a while. So
Senator Packwood, back in the 90s, had sexual assault cases filed by 26 staffers.
You're putting a number in the air?
She's putting a number in there, which I can't really see.
Okay.
This is how we communicate.
Look like 17 to me.
But ultimately,
a bunch of them.
So many. It ended up coming out that he had like 76 cases.
Well, you know, in California, now I know you were in the federal government, but in Sacramento, there's been a lot of nasty behavior too.
Yeah. There's nasty behavior all over, Drew. You know this. It's about a lot more than the act itself. It's why. It's the power syndrome. It's the disrespectful syndrome and all kinds of other stuff.
Yes, it's all kinds of other stuff. That's exactly right.
Nicole and I are exploring for some other project we're working on.
Sort of a Me Too project?
Sort of ish.
I want to correct the record with Packwood. Not every one of the women say he assaulted them, but there were 21 women who said he either assaulted them or harassed them. Or stuck his tongue down their mouth. Or
oh my God!
Whatever, you know, horrible.
Just a little harmless tongue sticking.
And so, I was new then, and was not on the ethics committee. And I sat back and I was waiting patiently for the ethics committee to throw the bum out, and it never happened. And I kept agitating, I can't tell your listeners enough. When you're a freshman in the Senate, you're not even supposed to open your mouth, you know, really.
Who says that?
Why does that happen? It's just in general. You just feel like you're not supposed to.
And you're a woman, and it's early in sort of the time of female senators.
Yeah, there were six women out of 100. Yeah. But bottom line was, I kept thinking they're going to get on the case. And I had a really close friend, Barbara Mikulski, who was sitting on the committee. She was the first Democratic woman ever elected in her own right in the 80s. Make a long story short, I went up to her one day and I said, are you doing anything about this thing? It's hanging out there for a year and we need to get this guy out, because I had been meeting with the women. And Barbara said, I can't talk about it. I'm not allowed to, which was true. So I looked at her and I said, unless I see a signal on your face, I'm going to demand that we have hearings and this move forward. And she gave me one of those looks that only Barbara could give you, which is, go for it, girl.
Oh, good.
And so
I thought you were going to say it look like I'm going to kill you if you do.
No.
So I've been working on a documentary about Barbara. And I know I didn't let you introduce
that Barbara
her.
This Barbara.
Barbara Mikulski makes a special appearance, though, in it. But Packwood was one of the pieces that I was very intrigued by. And in part, Mom goes on Charlie Rose's show to talk about the Packwood case.
Which was weirdly ironic.
That's where I was going with it. But basically, the thing was going to get swept under the rug, and Packwood was going to get away with it because his buddies, his bros, back at the old boys club, were going to protect him, and Barbara wasn't going to let that happen, Barbara Boxer. And it took 3 years to get the guy out, but she's sitting on Charlie Rose. I'm watching this tape and just thinking, wow, he just got pushed out of his gig. And ultimately, at the end of my documentary, you will see that 80% of the men in my doc have been forced out, resigned, all over Me Too type stuff.
Well, I want to drill in. But first I want to get your story out, Nicole, because I'll give you a chance. So you grew up where?
I grew up in Marin County, California.
Yeah. Did you go to school up there?
I tried.
Where'd you go? Did you go to college? Or?
I ended up going to Santa Barbara City College and NYU Film School.
Got it, which is a great film school. Yeah. And that's when you became a documentarian?
Not yet. I sort of stumbled through. I did a lot of feature stuff here in L.A. I was a development executive, and I worked on a few big movies like Rudy, the Notre Dame football movie.
I would imagine most people know that.
Yeah.
Tisch is the name of the
that's right.
the film school in New York.
Tisch School of the Arts.
Yeah,
right.
It's one of the premier film schools. Mm-hmm. Okay, and now your goal is to do podcast, and is it specifically now a lot of female empowerment type stuff you're getting into? Or
we do. I think, you know, my segment on the show that's weekly is called Hot Race of the Week, and we're really looking at candidates that are running, not just women, but also men of color, just sort of the outside-the-box candidates that seem to be so happening right now. So it's been super exciting, a lot of challengers.
Now, I am Lauren Savant is who you talked to on the radio. I believe it was the two of us you talked to. She is the object of she was the object of Harvey Weinstein's affection with the plant. And she was the one that said Me Too. She was really one that started the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And so she's in the middle of it all the time, very quietly. But I watching, you know, what she interfaces with. And I feel deeply interested in this. Mm-hmm. And I've been interested in it in many different ways. I used to walk around college – I used to lecture at college campuses. And I would sort of advocate for women to contemplate why it is that they've taken on the sexual identity of a 17-year-old male, if that makes them happy or not, because I was seeing a lot of unhappiness. And I was just sort of saying, is there something else that might work for you?
But
it was kind of an Uncle Tom thing, in fact, to take on the identity.
When was this?
I did it for 10 years. I stopped probably about 6 years ago.
Interesting. Still at this time they're doing it.
Well, less so now. Less so now. But this is really the 90s. Well, the 95 to 2008, 2009. It was and there was very big pushback. How dare you? And I kept thinking, okay, you know, if that's what you want, that's fine. Now when I talk to people about it, there's a lot of, I was angry. It didn't really fit. Now I'm really angry. And I asked my wife about this. We were watching a documentary about Hugh Hefner, and it was all this exploitation of women. And I said, why did people enthusiastically put up with that? She said something very interesting. She had said, "That's the only move we had. That's all we had.
It's
that was
so
the move."
Important.
And I thought, wow, that's very.
What are your options?
Yes,
I'll give you a very quick story.
Yeah,
I go back a long time, and when I went to college. It was a long time ago. It was the 60s. I was married in 62, and I graduated 6 months later. And my husband went to law school. We're still together after a lot of years. And I had an incident at the time with a professor who had given me a terrible grade in my final. And I had always had great grades. I was an economics major, and I was mad. So I called the guy up. Now, this guy was the symbol of family man. He was known, he had like 6-7 kids. Everyone loved him. In the economics world then, there were only 2 or 3 women in that whole class. So I get annoyed. I call, I get him on the phone. I said, "What happened?" He said, "Well, you just didn't do well on your final." I said, "That's impossible." He said, "You want to come see the final?" I graded it. Yeah.
Uh-oh.
So I say, "Professor, yes. I can't believe that you did this. It's the only grade below an A- that I ever got." So my husband walks me to meet the guy. Tell me if I'm going on too long, Nicole.
Don't be looking at me. Drew
Schell. I'm listening. I want to hear the end of this.
If you're bored by it.
No.
So he's waiting downstairs. I go up, and I walk in. Now, I'm 21, barely. And I walk in, and I look around, it's a big table, and him and me in this class. Classes were over in this room. And I said, "Where's my final? I don't see it." And he said, "Oh, I didn't bring it." So I said, well, we were going to go over the final. Where is it? And I'm still not getting it. And he says, oh, I just want to tell you something, Barbara. I said, well, what's that? He said, I just always watched you, and I just thought, you're so energetic, and you're so cute, and you're so, every time I ask a question, you raise your hand, and you're my favorite. So okay. I said, oh, well, then why'd you give me the grade?
Yeah.
And he said, well, I kind of had to bend over backwards. He said, you know, I have to go. And I get up to leave. He throws me up against the wall, like over there, and I'm in your studio now, near the door.
Yeah.
He throws me against there, and he leans over. Now, he could, to me, he looked like he was 85. He was probably 45. You know? and he puts his mouth on me, and I push him. I grab the door. I run. I run down. This is the most important part of it. My husband's waiting. He said, what happened? I said, tell him the story. What happened? He said, oh, my God, let's go. And I said, well, whoa, just a minute. What are you going to do? Well, I'm going to tell him, I'm going to punch him. I'm gonna... You can't do that. Well, then we have to go talk to the head of the department. What will happen? I won't graduate. If I don't graduate, they won't believe me. If I don't graduate, I won't get my job on Wall Street. It's waiting for me. Bottom line is I never told a soul until Anita Hill a million years later. It's what your wife said. It's what are your options? What are you going to lose? It was a terrible thing. And then when I went to Wall Street, they wouldn't give me the job I wanted. I had to be an assistant, like a secretary instead of a broker. But that's a whole other chapter in my book. But that's the answer. The shocking thing is women took it on the nose, took it on the chin. And I think that this Me Too movement, that's why it's such a breakthrough.
Yes. It's now, my fear is overreach, that it would go too far or won't have a due process and will lose some of its...
It's possible, but I got to say that just seeing women come out in mass, especially women in my generation, I am younger than Barbara.
If you were not, we'd have to do a really deep dive into biology here.
Well, I thought that was going to be funny, but seeing women come out, it really sets an example for the younger generation, the younger girls, that they don't have to take this. Really?
No, I know. Yeah, that's of course.
But even if that was all it was, like meaning
I
it's
agree.
Great to prosecute people when there's evidence. And by the way, today I was thinking when you guys were talking or listening that today they had a hearing on the Sexual Assault Bill of Rights in Congress, which is part of this sweeping, overarching thing that has been talked about for a while in Congress about how to legislate itself as it relates to sexual assault in Congress. And it was very interesting. Remember Terry Crews?
Yes.
Okay, so Terry Crews testified, and that was all today, and it was absolutely courageous and fascinating that all rape survivors, all victims of sexual assault, there would be this sort of bill of rights for sexual assault.
Is that requiring a law, or is that an ethics standard?
Yes, it's a sweeping package of laws that would...
Because I know Sacramento, there's a movement, too, to try to clean up, but it doesn't seem to go anywhere.
Well, there's a couple of things going on. I have to throw in... When we wrote the Violence Against Women Act, that was Joe Biden. And I was in the House at the time, and he was the leader in the Senate on this bill. And he came over to me and he said, Barbara, would you carry the Violence Against Women Act in the House? I said, I'd be honored, Senator. And so we did get certain pieces of it through. Then years later, when I got to the Senate, he said, will you help me really get the larger bill through? I said, yes. This was an amazing bill. It funded shelters for abused women. It did, lighting on streets, more police officers in certain areas, and it looked at college campuses. It did a lot. Mm-hmm. But the main thing it did, it said, ipso facto, if there is a rape or if there is an attack on a woman, because she's a woman, it's a civil right. And it was going to be protected under civil rights, and it got thrown out of the court. So we still have a lot of work to do, and I sense that this new look in the Congress may be to try and finally say, ipso facto, if you're a woman and you get raped, it's because you're a woman, it should be a civil rights violation, and that would lead to swifter prosecution.
Oh, interesting.
But it also would attempt to sort of say, no matter the circumstances of the rape, because like I did a documentary about sexual assault on college campuses, and I also did a film about sexual assault in the military. Mm. Both policed and handled completely differently, totally separate systems of justice. And so, you know, that's a part of the problem as well. It's like there's no like equity among these different
circumstances. Well, that's kind of where my head was at, which is that for a change, I don't think there's any concern about governmental overreach when it comes to this issue. It's a weird social overreach with social media. The mob has overreached. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it couldn't be the government.
Well, it's not because they're not that involved right now. Right. But the mob has taken the matters.
Well, give me an example.
Well, I have friends who have gotten severely harmed by accusations that were – spurious, for sure spurious. Okay. They just bad relationships.
Not Louis C.K. level.
Nothing like that. Right. Really just things that relationships that went bad, that people had different experiences, and so a couple of accusations come up and people their ability to make a living. I mean, it's like Soviet Russia. You're just not able to make a living and no process, no ability to And I was talking to Lauren about this, Lauren Savant, who's my partner, and she said, no, I can't sign off on this unless there's a pattern, multiple women coming forward and a pattern. Mm-hmm. But so the Me Too movement doesn't get behind that, but the mob does.
That's right.
And so I don't know what we do about that because it marginalizes the legitimate complaints, the serious complaints. It makes them all –
It's true, but I think the way to deal with it really is through culture change. And if we felt if it felt like basically what you're describing is shitty men, just shitty men.
No, shitty. Oh, but what
you know
you're talking about?
Meaning your friends potentially at a time could have been
shitty
acting
relationships
poorly.
But there's another category for sure, which is the one you're talking about. That part, interestingly, I'm not sure that part's yet sort of
out
then figured out do with that,
but it's interesting,
men behaving shitty,
and that's a cultural thing.
Yes.
I think it's so interesting. Barbara's experience, you know, she's been with my dad her whole life, she sort of had one partner, and that's, you know, that was just a generational thing, and then here comes our generation and we've had a couple marriages maybe, and you know, I think this young one, they're just doing it totally differently, and so there's the opportunity, you know, there's the opportunity to sort of call this thing out. We see it, we smell it, we know what it is, and there's words for it.
The largest technology conference on the planet is now on demand at Podcast One. Web Summit has teamed up with Podcast One to bring you the best tech talk. Each weekday, listen to a new lecture or panel from one of the past Web Summit conferences. They cover everything from the future of driving to artificial intelligence. Listen free to Web Summit exclusively on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and the Podcast One app. If you love the show, share it with a friend and leave us a rating and a review. If you're looking to buy a car, you're familiar with terms like MSRP, and you might not even know what that means. Same goes for invoice, list price, dealer price. Have I confused you? Well, really what you want to know is, what are you going to pay? How much? Exactly. How much? Why are cars so mysterious? Well, True Car understands, and they have created True Price. Now you can know exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories, before you get to the dealership, and you know you've locked in a price for an actual piece of inventory on a True Car certified dealer's lot. And they compete with you for your business. That's right, because they set their prices competitively. That dealer wants your business. True Car dealers will show you the true price on cars like the one you want, all from the comfort of your home. And how do you know it's your true price is a great price? Well, you see the scattergram. You learn about what the price scatter is for that car in your area. And your certified dealers know this. They set that true price competitively. They want your business. So when you're ready to buy new or used, don't forget they have used as well. Visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. Now, you've been hearing me speak about the supplements for Bergamet for about 2 years now, mostly their sport formulation, which can help you reduce inflammation and shorten workout recovery times. But I really dig the original formula that got me so excited about the brand, Bergamet Mega Plus O. Like all Bergamet supplements, Mega Plus O is key extracts from the bergamot citrus fruit. That's right, bergamot. It's extremely rich in polyphenols, and it's been shown to reduce the risk of heart disease. It's from a specific region of Italy where they use it like crazy. We have met an Italian woman from that area, and she uses it all the time. That fruit has given us the Bergamet Mega Plus O. It works like a natural statin. It can address conditions that face by millions of people, the metabolic syndrome, essentially, abdominal fat, high cholesterol, high triglycerides, high blood pressure. Normally, physicians would recommend any number of pharmaceutical agents, but Bergamet Mega Plus O offers an all-natural solution. Discuss it with your doctor. Cardiologists and physicians all over the world have been recommending Bergamet. Its effectiveness is the subject of many scientific publications. I've taken it myself. I've suggested it for certain patients. I still have it to this day on those patients. And for a limited time, Bergamet is offering Dr. Drew listeners 25% off any of their supplements by entering the code DRDREW at checkout. That's Dr. Drew, all one word. To learn more, visit bergamet.com. That is BERGAMET.com. And remember to use that code Dr. Drew at checkout. Well, I deal a lot with that age group, and my kids are 25 years old. I have 25-year-old triplets, and the boys are scared to death to even talk to women, especially if they have a beer in their hand. They will not do it because they don't want to be in any way. And what we're seeing is a lot of young males retreating to pornography and all kinds of stuff. And then when they finally do get an attraction, they start stalking because they don't have any skill with dating. They don't know how to do that. They've never done it. There's kind of a weird side effect developing that we're seeing.
Don't you think that's also social media, though, with Tinder?
Yes, 100%. It's all absolutely.
So we have a lot of work to do, basically, is what you're saying.
I'm just trying to figure out these unintended consequences because that's where people's health is getting affected, and no one intends it. No one wants that.
Yeah.
Everyone wants what you're talking about, and it's because the mob is sort of taking it over. And usually we'd go, oh, I don't want the government to overreach. I don't want the government to tell me what to do. Mm-hmm. Government's sort of lagging behind a little bit right now, as you're saying.
Well, I think what Nicole has taught me is it's really about the culture.
This is what she's saying, and I totally agree with her. I completely agree.
And I think – and this is a tough time because we are in a transition. And
– man, are we.
And I'll tell you, it's a very important transition, which is – I call it equality. And it's hard for people to give up when they have been able to be the more important and they have been the one to assert power. It's hard to share power. All these things are hard. You know better than we do, as you know, you have studied behaviors and the rest. But, you know, my view is that it is a tough moment in history. And this is a necessary moment in history. And yes, we have to be careful that people aren't hurt, either the male, the female. We have to make sure that the truth is what's the most important thing.
Truth or justice or both?
It's all the same.
All the same.
Truth is going to lead you to justice, the hard truth. But until there's a culture change where people understand what are the limits, what's acceptable, what's right, your kids should understand exactly what's right. To me, you know, I've got three grandsons and a granddaughter. And, you know, to me, if their parents let me and I could grandmother them.
Oh, watch out.
my basic thing that I would say is, you know, you just have to understand respect. That's not that complex. Now, if there's a liar out there, somebody's out, that truth will come out. So I wouldn't get that overwrought about. That can go either way. There are bad people out there, male, female. But most people are good. And most people, if the culture says this is the right way to deal with it. And I think that is why the Me Too movement is so important, because it's calling attention to the way it has been. You know, for me, you know, getting thrown up against the door by an older professor, are you kidding me? That wouldn't happen today. At least, no. I don't think so. I don't think so. Not today.
Well, if it would.
They wouldn't throw somebody against the wall.
No, they would. And they would find another way to get you back to their dorm.
They'd be too scared.
Well, a professor would?
Yeah, it happens.
But if that would happen, though, I don't think there's – I can't imagine this.
It happened at Berkeley recently.
But
the guy stayed on staff.
Well, that's weird. But I can't imagine there's a – well – I can't imagine there's a college student on earth that doesn't understand the process if they get involved in something
like that.
It's
getting better.
Look at Brock Turner, the swimmer at Stanford.
That was two, 3 years ago. Things have changed a lot.
Oh, you're just saying like, okay.
I can't imagine going forward.
Look, it's definitely getting better. There's no question. You'd have to be asleep at the wheel to do something so dumb.
I think you guys, it happens all the time, not to be so outside the box, but think of who our president is right now. Every day he's empowering. I thought we needed some comedy, but, you know, I mean, every day he's sort of empowering that attitude He's still doing it by virtue of him having the power he has. We've sort of said, hey, you know, it's okay that you did all this, you know, all of this activity outside of your marriage, or it's okay that you were on that Hollywood Access tape and all of that stuff and speaking that way about women. There's a, you know, there's a complicity in the people around him, I think.
No more role model up there. That's thanks, Nicole, for bringing it up.
But it's a give and take,
it.
You know?
I hate it, but you're right.
But it's, I don't think there are, I've been around college campuses for the last, my kids are still in grad school and stuff,
yeah.
And I've not counted anything close to a college student who would have not understood.
I know,
that
but Drew,
like
I'm
that.
Telling you, go to USC. My son just graduated from USC, and I know that one of the frats just got shut down because they had rapes at school.
Professors.
Oh, back to professors.
Yeah, professors acting out
I'll
on
find
students.
You one.
Well, they got rid of the doctor over there. It's not good.
Oh, right. The Michigan.
Yeah.
Oh, there's two.
No, she's talking about
no,
the SC,
there's two.
The SC
there's
doctor.
USC.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
But so
again,
many.
But again, this is stuff now coming to light, finally
okay.
being
so
unearthed.
So I think because I'm an optimist, always an optimist. If I wasn't, I wouldn't be right here now. I would be watching a movie somewhere else. But I think that
I'm an optimist too.
It's
even
a necessary.
It's, even though it seems
it's a hard time. But it's so necessary, and eventually the culture is going to catch up with the Me Too movement and the injustice that we're going to see now and then. But I could tell you right now, when 20 women come forward or 15
right.
women come forward,
yeah. there's a pattern.
Yeah,
yes.
I mean, and yeah. I do agree, when it's one individual versus one, you have to be a lot more careful. And there's ways to prove things, but I do think
but,
at
but
the end
when
of the
mob's
day,
in
yeah.
charge, that's what I'm concerned with, because you
sure.
don't have the chance to even discuss proving or not proving. It's
sure.
just boop, done.
Right.
Done. That's
right.
it.
Well,
I think
there
we
shouldn't
agree.
We don't have mob justice. That's not right. You're right. This
yeah,
shouldn't be a
so,
mob justice.
So how do we know when we are where we need to be as a culture and with the – I mean, obviously this bill you're talking about –
You know what? I really think it's going to have to do with prosecutions. You know, I mean, for –
But how do we know we are where we need to be?
Because people
will
be held responsible for committing crimes in this way.
And how will we know we're there?
I think that women won't be part of their job interview or part of their job experience won't be sleeping with the director. I mean, I'm just telling – like
– I mean, that's so far from where we – I mean, that's – we're a million miles from that. Please.
Look at just what happened with Matt Lauer. I'm telling you, it's not everybody.
We're a million miles from it now.
Okay.
We've traveled
right,
that distance.
But can I
so
say
how
this?
Do we know
no,
we're there?
No, but if you
want
to be – you want to talk stats? If you look at rape in the military
– Yeah.
And Nicole explored this in a film with Kirby Dick.
No, and this
and
stuff
Amy
is, this
Sweary.
Stuff has had the impact.
Here's the thing.
It's really impacted.
And you're asking
things.
When will we know
yeah.
when we find out that not just one in 30 are being reported. I don't even remember the stats on – do you remember the stats on how many are reported? But they're –
It's
terrible.
Very few.
It's terrible.
Of rapes,
they
of sexual assault.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
so
and they,
that's what
let,
I'm
let
saying.
Me just say, they know how many are reported, and they also have a terrible record of going after the perp.
Actual
and,
prosecutions.
And so, okay, so I think in the military, there'll be a real statistic way to know if there's if things are getting better. On the college campuses, I think in these environments, there are ways to track it. But if I could take a broader view,
yeah.
a way bigger,
Please.
Broader view, which gets to the culture and gets to society, it would be, we'll know it's getting better when half the United States Senate are women. We'll know it's getting better. You know, when at least half the people in the boardroom are women. It ought to be half of everything. Not a quota system, but in reality,
yeah.
we are half the population, and we should have half the power. And I am going to say something else that's not predictable. Not all women are good either. You know, a woman with power can sometimes abuse the power. And also, we've seen women teachers who have had affairs with underage boys. So not everybody is perfect. So the society has to move to a place of utter and total respect. And we have to have...
Well, but respect
the women
you're mentioning sick people, though. You're talking about sick people, the you know, those women. I've dealt with lots of them that act out on their teenage mm-hmm. students. Those are mentally ill. There's some serious illness there.
Well, with that,
and so respect
to
does
whole,
not
right.
well,
interfere with that. I mean, that's
well, okay, all right. But the fact is, a child has to know
big people
who's the victim from the parents has to understand it's not okay. So you're never going to cure every problem in the world, but you're going to have a sea change, I believe, when you have a representative government that makes the laws, that sets the tone, so that a young man, before he thinks that, you know, women are powerless, looks around and, my goodness, yeah, there's a lot of women.
There's a lot
power.
Of evidence, though, about, you know, if a rapist gets away with it, he'll do it again. So that's my own, you know, that's, and I think Me Too and what we're talking about, culture and rape, those are kind of different. They're not the same. Right? I mean,
right, yeah.
A rapist is a rapist, and a bad date is a bad date.
Yes, yes.
You know, and sometimes women will go on a bad date, and we won't be really clear, and there's ambiguity around things that happen and that kind of thing.
Well, like, how do you, like Aziz Ansari, what do you call that?
Yeah, you know, I think that was poor communication.
Okay, but he's had severe consequences from that.
Yes,
so,
he has.
Yeah, and so.
He has, because he got caught up, and like you're talking about in the mob, and that was actually a moment. That was like, you know, the second the smoke in the pan, the oil gets too hot and it smokes.
There's lots of those.
And you have to throw that out.
He's
I
just
believe
won.
That.
It happens all the time.
I believe that. But look, and I'm not going to sit here. I feel bad for
what
him.
What do we do with
but
that?
What I'm going to say is, you know, let's not, you know, take away from the other scenario, which
not
is very
suggesting
real.
Not,
I know. That, I just want to be very clear
well, let's
where
be very
I'm
clear.
Coming from.
It does take away from it if they are, oh, if spurious complaints are overstated. It does diminish the real complaints.
I know. So what? How do we? You know. We, you know.
That's
what we really need. We need to all be strapped with a truth detector, and so our faces turn. You know, the light lights up when we're lying. And I mean, no, I'm
no,
joking,
it's
but
the,
I'm just saying there's
the mob.
Something.
It's not the. It's not the, either the people involved. It's the mob's.
I don't
what
know.
The mob does with it.
I don't know.
Because this girl had
you
a bad experience.
Yeah,
the girl had a bad experience. There's no.
Maybe she wanted press too. Who knows? Maybe she. You know. Maybe
but again,
she...
I can't blame her. I blame the mob and what
okay.
they did with it.
It's interesting. It's very. You know, I haven't thought a lot about that because I've been too busy trying to change the system. Seriously,
the government
like the
side.
Very very broke. Well, no, like culturally, maybe government, but also same thing at college campuses. Just 1 in 4 girls getting raped on a campus, or 1 in 5.
That's old data now. I mean, this mm-hmm. Again, having been on college
well,
campus.
I mean, no one has the last, you know, the last year of
last,
reporting.
This has been about last 3 years.
I really doubt it's changed.
Oh
very
my God!
Much.
It's so.
I can't wait to see this.
Maybe
study.
Not at SC. I don't know, but at these certainly
well,
on the elite schools, they are literally fearful.
They're freaking out.
They're fearful
they
of talking to
be.
Each other.
They
yeah,
should
and
be.
That's sort of where they're at.
Yeah,
and so.
It's
and
interesting.
That's
it's
just,
interesting. Well, let's come back and I would love to see that data because
yeah.
I mean, if then maybe there's some benefit to the mob. That's all I'm going to say.
In spite of the collateral damage.
If it stops the raping, yeah.
So well, that's but the mob isn't what did it. It's the awareness on college campus and the cultural changes on college
but
campuses.
Why? Well, that's the key. The cultural changes. Why? Because that movie that Amy did was
scared the shit out of everybody.
I think it's
which one.
Well, Invisible War and the Hunting Ground.
The
there's
hunting
been
ground.
Many. I mean,
yeah.
And I think that that's important to take something like that and get it out there. And again, there are going to be some bad outcomes for certain people, and that's bad. And there has to be justice in the world. And I don't like mob justice at all. I like clean justice, justice.
Maybe if the government was more proactive and clear about
yeah,
this.
I agree.
Maybe
what do you think of consent laws? Do you know about them?
Well, we have them.
They
what
have
do you,
one
what
now.
Do you think of it in concept? Like with your kids, like would you tell your boys, you know, before they engage in any kissing or anything to talk to the person they're with to say, "Hey, coming in for kiss."
I discuss paperwork with
right?
them. Right? I'm not kidding.
So you're for it.
I'm not kidding. It's
yeah.
gotten to that point where yeah. I'm telling them if they don't have like a written consent,
yeah.
they are in some kind of peril and they
right.
should be thinking about it. Mm-hmm. That's they were like, "Oh yeah. Yeah."
Spontaneity gone.
No. That's
yeah. I know.
It's yeah. So, you know, and they need to understand, you know, a 0.8 alcohol level or 0.08.
Yeah.
No consent.
Right.
So 2 glasses of wine, no consent.
I know. Now kids need to be experts in what the legal limit looks like, or maybe they carry around a blow.
No. Just don't drink 2 glasses of wine and
yeah.
try to get consent.
Yeah.
It's very simple.
Mm-hmm.
Don't try to drive a car. Don't try to get consent.
God, being a parent, I thought it was hard in my day. Remember, Nicole, we had the AIDS crisis. What did I do? I wrote you letters.
She sent me like a box of condoms at college.
Hey, we
here's a ream. Did you get that too?
Do you know the millennials are not using condoms now?
Oh,
I was with about 400 millennials the last couple of weeks. I was doing some television with them. I started talking about the increase in STIs and stuff, and I saw their face glaze over. And I said, well, condom use. And I saw, again, the eyes go down. I went, well, how many of you are using condom? And what percentage do you think of the room used condoms?
I would obviously under 50.
I would have guessed a lot, but
zero.
No.
Not one. And they all laughed at me for sort of discussing this with
them.
Like, zero. And
that's,
I thought,
frightening.
Whoa, we got some work to do again here.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
You know, it's every generation we got to go right back to square one.
It's
know.
True.
I'm thinking, I'm just my head started turning about the government having, if the government had deeper guidelines, maybe the mob wouldn't feel
Drew,
like it
I
needs
think
to do its thing.
There's a calling for you here, bud.
Yeah, I'm
like,
all.
I think you and I should start a consulting firm.
Well, I want to hear more about this civil the civil rights issue. And,
yeah.
And, yeah. Tell me more about that.
Well, I mean,
just
going. What I learned today, you mean? Yeah. This sexual assault bill of rights?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, check it out on C-SPAN. This is my favorite audio listening. I mean, I love podcasts, but C-SPAN is
yeah.
so good.
You and I are weird that way.
I know.
I
oh, you do?
My wife laughs at me when I watch book TV or
oh,
C-SPAN.
Oh, I live for book TV. Okay, so tonight when you get home in the middle of the night when you can't sleep because you're up worried that your son went on a date.
Didn't do his paperwork right.
Go on C-SPAN. Mom, what committee has Cory Booker – did I tell you what committee it was?
Well,
I can't remember who it was.
Been the Finance
just
Committee
Google
or the Judiciary Committee.
Yeah, look up Bill of Rights.
Again, thinking, you know, sort of wish list. Where does that – what does that look like when it becomes legislation? What would it be? What would it give us?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to standardize – what's acceptable, unacceptable, and more importantly, how you adjudicate the crime. So there'd be a level of playing field. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, that was what we need.
Yeah, right now people are applying different, depends on who you are, depends on where you are, depends on what you are, and how much evidence and all this stuff. So, but Mom would know more about how to craft the legislation, but I think...
Do you think that will happen, Barbara?
It sounds like a follow-on to the Violence Against Women Act. That's what it sounds like to me.
But it feels like there's an empty set, and as always, that's when the mob jumps in, right? When it doesn't have the right system in place to sort of adjudicate, as you're saying.
That's right.
I like that idea that there's a real set of standards, because then there's not this sort of
Here's the thing
about crime. Was Aziz a bad date or not a bad date?
There'll definitely be a chart for that.
Yeah.
It's either a crime or it's not. It's either a federal crime or it's a state crime.
That's the thing.
If they're looking at this, they're looking at it from a civil rights standpoint.
Yeah.
Which means it's minimus, you know, because it's a federal crime. Federal crimes.
No, if it's a federal crime,
aren't they more like
ipso facto? Because, for example, if a African-American is killed in a hate crime, that ipso facto, it's not only a crime.
It's a hate crime.
In the state and the locality, but it's a federal crime.
Yeah.
This is what we try to do with violence against women, because battering of women in what, remember Joe Biden says, why do we call it domestic violence? It sounds like it's a pet domestic.
That's funny. Mm.
Yeah, he said it's a terrible thing. You know, about every 30 seconds a woman is beaten. This isn't anything about kids dating. This is in relationship, whether it's a partnership or a marriage. It's a horrible situation. So I think that what they're doing is a follow-on to the Violence Against Women Act, which they're going to explore ways that they can say, no, if you do this, not only are you get in trouble in your state, but it's a federal crime, it's a civil rights crime.
Right.
And I have a feeling that's what that's what they're looking at.
I want to also go back to the shift when women are properly represented in all situations of power. Yeah. How do we help women get there?
Well, I'm going to turn to Nicole in a minute because she's focused on a lot of these young women. But it's the way I did it. Oh, it was putting together everyone that I knew at the time who believed in me, because I had run for local office and I served in local office before I ran for the House. And that included a lot of men and women. So I had, because I believe you need coalitions, people who knew that I could do this. I could win. I could raise the money.
So do we need to teach women how to do that?
Well, we need to teach women, and I'll turn it over to Nick.
Okay.
I want to say in my time, way back when there were two women in the Senate and I ran and we had the quote-unquote year of the woman in 92, we went from 2 to 6. Emily's List came to my assistance, and they were so wonderful because they adopted any woman who was running for a big office
pro-choice
like this.
Pro-choice women.
Yes, and Democrats. They are a Democratic organization and pro-choice Democrats. And they said, you don't have the networks that the men have for money because you don't belong to Rotary Clubs or any of those other things. So we're going to go out and we're going to raise tiny little bits of money for you. And we're going to send you every month, you're going to get an envelope. It's going to be $3 from this one and 10 from this. And because of Emily's List, I had the money. So money and message and courage and thick skin.
Yeah. And I mean, just on that now, I mean, it's happening. There, you know, we can talk about how to help women, but it's on. I mean, they're absolutely running. And that's the most important thing is just run. So that's number one. If you run, you have a chance of winning. Now we're seeing good women candidates running, and not only running, but running against other brilliant women candidates. Mm-hmm. And we saw that quite a bit even here in California in our jungle primary that we had. And we had we have outstanding women that are challenging the Republican men in these flippable seats, which is really exciting. And for the first time ever, you may see a freshman class going to Congress. Imagine it's January 3rd. This class of Congress is being sworn in, and all the freshmen gather for a photograph they're going to take on the steps of the Capitol. And for the first time ever, you're going to see a majority of women in that photograph.
It's possible. It's possible.
It's likely.
So in the freshman group.
In the freshman group. And this goes back to there's an organization that I had on the podcast last week on my podcast, Fight Back, called Vote Run Lead. And it's an outcropping from the White House Project, which is sort of the first nonprofit group that was created solely to think about how to get women in the pipeline so there could be a woman president. And so Vote Run Lead does workshops, trainings, will teach you. I think there's an online survey and a course you can take, just what to expect, you know, what to have in your kit. If you're going to run, I had asked Erin, who's the head of it, I want to run to be a DNC delegate. What should I do? And she's like, well, take our quiz, you know. And I thought, screw that. I know what's going on. But not many women out there have a mom who's in this business.
Well, and to be fair, the practice of democracy, we're sort of out of practice as a population, I think. And it's interesting
flexing
to see. Well, but it's interesting to see women lead the way back to the practice of democracy.
Well, yeah. All you have to do is look at the women's march that happened recently. People standing up against what they see as a president who's taken a wrecking ball to most of our values. A lot of them have to do with respect for women. When you take away, you know, their right to choose, their health care, you know, when you
snatch
decide
children
to work,
away.
Well,
from
good
sorry.
Lord, yes, snatch children
well,
away from their moms.
Corolla,
and the
you're in Corolla's. This is his network, and he asked me to, as it pertains to border. He asked me to ask you guys two questions. One was, what would you do with the border situation? How do we solve that? Because there's all these complexities. Every time I talk to another immigration lawyer, I get more and more confused.
Well, to me, when people say it's complicated, it's confused. No, let's deal with it. When people seek asylum, that's legal.
Right, but
And for them to say they have to go to certain ports of entry, that's a bait and switch because they go to the port of entry and they say, we're too busy. Mm-hmm. Go somewhere else. Then they go to another port that's
one fix would be not give them enough manpower to deal with the port of entry.
A.
Right, that'd be one.
A, or open up other
ports of entry.
More ports of entry. How come they don't go to the U.S. consulate?
Wait a minute, before we get to that, I want to continue just because – Here's what I think you do.
Go ahead.
Then you have to have, if there's a lot of people coming, you have to have a surge of immigration judges and attorneys to help.
Yes.
Now, we have a number of fabulous organizations, from the ACLU to La Raza to many others, who will work, you know, very cheap prices to get attorneys down there. And you deal with this expeditiously. Last point. Trump says, catch and release, that's the worst thing in the world. If you take these mothers with their children and you send them out to visit their aunt and uncle somewhere, they'll never come back for their hearing. Lie. The facts from ICE are that if you put an ankle bracelet on one of these moms or dads and you say, here's your court date, 99.8% of them show up. So it's not true.
Are there
the
any
problem
issue,
is
any
it's taking too long.
Any issues in putting ankle bracelets on people?
No. They don't. They know that they have to show up. I don't have a problem with that. I'm just saying to you that the reason it's a problem is that it's taking 4 years for them to get their hearing.
I agree.
So now
people.
They're lit. We need
more
people.
More manpower.
So, excuse me, $25 billion for a wall? If you took just a tiny proportion of that, you could fund all these things.
And most of my understanding is from the attorneys that a lot of, if not most of these asylum seekers are not going to get it. Then what do we do?
Well, you send them back. That's the rule. That's the rule.
That's most of these people because they're going from poverty and drug strife and all these things. So don't we need to change the law on that?
Well, here's my view. This is my view. If you fear for your life, if you fear for your child's life, if you fear for your safety, if you fear that the gang is going to force your child to join the gang, if you are a victim of abuse by your spouse or someone close to you, these should all be reasons why we can grant you
asylum. So change that law.
Actually, that's the law. Sessions has changed
the
reasons.
He's interpreted the law, I see.
And he's saying, no more if you're abused, this or that.
Got it.
And
okay.
He's saying, no more if you're... That's wrong.
Got it.
Let's go back to where it was, and you will have some of the people will meet the test, and some of them won't meet the test, and sadly, for them, they have to go back. It's called rules of the road. But what they did, and Nicole Boxer, who is my partner in the podcast, and also, you know, my loving daughter... and a loving mother, she would call me up these last few days and say, I can't even get out of bed. I can't take the pictures. And this is America. This is reminiscent of the Nazis, what they did, you know. And Nicole says they told one woman, we're just taking your kid to give him a shower, and then he disappeared. Well, I think of showers. I think of the Nazis. Mm-hmm. They gave people showers. Now, I'm not conflating the end result. But I am saying the separation of children, we've done it before to Native Americans. We've done it before in slavery times.
Japanese internment camps.
We interned the Japanese. These are horrible moments in our history.
But can I just say one thing, which is it's similar to the Me Too situation, which is the root cause. The root causes of why people want to leave their countries, you know? And how can we be good neighbors?
Good point.
Again, this is...
Well, how can we help them heal their countries?
Yeah.
Oof.
I know, but I'm just saying...
I agree with that.
In some ways we've been responsible for selling a lot of guns
I totally agree with you. By either doing sort of either covert or non-covert or just inadvisable interventions, now what do we do?
Yeah, I know.
Well, let me take a stab at that.
Yeah.
Because when you went, that's what people said after World War II. Europe's in a mess. You know, as a kid,
I love the idea of fixing the problem in Central America.
We can do
but there's a triangle of three countries where they're the murder capitals of the world.
Yeah.
We can't solve it all on our own. But I would suggest to you there are ways to set up safe zones in these countries. And this is a proposal others have come up with. And we should be involved.
Investing.
With the United States. Mm-hmm. Just safe zones for people.
Well,
so that they don't feel they have
to
come.
Right? Yeah.
They don't have to come. And they're in a place where they can get assistance.
Yeah.
And, you know, we are in the Americas, for goodness sakes. We can't turn our back on our neighbors like this. So, but, you know, everything that I'm saying now would have an impact if there was a president who had a heart and who understood history, and we have a president who doesn't understand history, who doesn't have a heart, and is using this to scapegoat people to keep the Congress in 2018. And that's for my final speech.
Fred's going to be talking about TheraWorks Relief, and if you're one of the millions of Americans who suffer from muscle cramps, your legs and feet, relief is in sight. TheraWorks Relief is a topical foam clinically proven to relieve muscle cramps fast with daily use. Now, TheraWorks Relief can prevent muscle cramps before they start. You put it on twice a day, and it can reduce those muscle cramps. And I've seen it work magically for some patients. It doesn't necessarily take the pain away, but it does reduce the cramps. And, of course, if the cramps go away, the pain tends to stop. For over a year now, I've been recommending TheraWorks Relief to my family, friends, and patients. The results speak for themselves. TheraWorks Relief is the real deal. This is a life-changing product for some people. And best of all, you don't need a prescription. It's over-the-counter. And a lot of people in underserved communities have this problem, can't sleep, have real serious issues with it. TheraWorks Relief is now an option over-the-counter. It is my choice for preventing and relieving muscle cramps. Make it yours, too. Get TheraWorks Relief today at select CVS, Rite Aids, and Walgreens pharmacies, or at TheraWorksRelief.com. Talk to your pharmacist as well about TheraWorks Relief. They are enthusiastic. Don't have to take a pill for the first time. You can use a topical foam. Experience relief from muscle cramps for yourself. That is TheraWorks Relief for your muscle cramps. All right, Quip. That's right. Quip is the new electric toothbrush that packs just the right amount of vibrations into an ultra-slim design with guiding pulses to simplify better brushing at a fraction of the cost. That is key. Quip starts at just $25. And right now, when you go to Get Quip, Q-U-I-P, getquip.com/Drew, get your first refill pack for free with the Quip electric toothbrush. That is your first refill pack free at getquip.com/Drew. Again, it's getquip.com/Drew. With this, you don't have to worry about getting new brush heads. They deliver it right to your door. And 75% of us don't refresh our bristles every 3 months like you're supposed to. But with Quip, it gives you that and tips on oral care you probably never knew. It's got a wireless mirror mount, declutters your bathroom, doubles as a travel cover. The subscription model is a thoughtful, inexpensive solution for people who want to make it easy to keep up with good habits that will improve their overall oral health. Again, let Quip do the thinking for you when it comes to your teeth. Go to getquip.com/Drew. That is getquip.com/Drew. Well, one more. Adam wanted one more question.
Well, okay. My last point on this is
whatever
2018.
Adam wants.
I know. I have
2018.
Have to.
That's it.
Okay. And what's wrong with school vouchers? He wants to know. Why not school vouchers? If people want to use the free market.
Oh, the problem. I'll tell you the problem with it. It's taxpayer money, and it's going to schools, away from schools. It's money taking out of schools where 95% of the children in the country go. I have no problem with charters. But I think to take people out to private school, it's taxpayers' funding that's going there, and I think that's wrong.
I would just say to Adam, update your spiel, dude.
Well,
that's like a 10, 12-year-old debate, really.
The voucher system?
Yeah.
I thought the charter
get a little more progressive.
I thought the charter thing was a good thing.
It's happening
but
in the
city. I've got teachers that are patients that keep telling me, oh, it's the worst thing. It's the worst
thing. Some of
them
are good and some of them are terrible.
I don't get why it's not working.
Some of them are good and some of them are not good. They're not because if you look at any set of people, if they're good, the school will be good. If you have somebody the principal is critical. The hiring of the teachers and the involvement of the parents, if you have good people, it's going to be fine. And it gives the charters a chance to try some new things. But I think taking money away from public schools where 95% of the kids go is not the answer. And I think charter is the answer if it's done right and there's accountability.
And that's the state system, though.
Actually, yes. Yeah. It's more localized.
Each school district decides.
Yeah, LA Unified has some charter, some not.
Yeah,
some of the charters are great. Some of them aren't good.
The school stuff.
And we really do have to be creative on the thing. And it's all about the dedication of the people and the caring of the parents. And it's all that's the magic sauce.
So it's family and education, right?
It's the professionals should be treated like professionals, paid but like professionals, and the parents should be supportive. I'm a product of public schools all the way from kindergarten through college. Okay.
Yeah.
And I went toe to toe with people from the fanciest schools, and not that my school was perfect, but my schools were good, They were solid, and they had high expectations.
Yeah, and that seemed like a different time in some public school systems, right?
Yeah, I have a set of kids in Oakland Public Schools, and I'll tell you right now, they are in a great school. I was just there. The fifth grader just graduated, and I was so impressed with the kids and the teachers, and it worked.
Economics of the neighborhood as well, let's be honest. They're not living in Los Angeles.
It's a middle class, upper middle class, yes. So there's a lot of involvement, but you have to have that magic sauce that goes into it. And
how do we get the parents to participate if they don't value education? If they don't value education, they don't understand the value of education.
Oh, I think they do. I'm a believer that people do get it. They understand that it's the kids when they get out. If they go to college, they do better. They get better jobs. They graduate from high school. It's better than if they don't.
What I hear back from all the millennials is college is a waste of time, a waste of money. This is the new trend.
Maybe it is. We need to listen to these kids. They know what kind of world they want.
I'll tell you what's bad. Student loans are bad. Student loans at these terrible rates, that's disgusting.
They're going to have to be full-time saving the planet.
And I think that takes
a college education to know the technologies to do that.
I think the indebtedness – well, and so – but what Nicole's saying, though, is maybe that's already available.
It could
online.
Be online.
Yeah, maybe it's something you could do
that's
differently
right.
or creatively.
Well, there are online universities, some of which are terrible and some of which are good. Hey, I got to disagree. The facts are the facts. You go to college, you earn more money.
You guys both have the name Boxer, so go at it.
I do it all the time.
You go to high school, you do better than if you don't graduate. That's just the facts of life. And, you know, I think everyone kind of knows it. But really, the student loan thing is tragedy. Before I left the Senate, I had a woman come to me. She says, "You're not going to believe this. I'm on Social Security, and I'm still paying off my student loan."
Oh, that makes perfect sense
to
me.
And I put my hands to my head, and I thought, this is horrible.
Yes.
And I remember when Kevin said he had all those.
That's why Bernie had such traction. That's one very issue with college kids.
Absolutely.
It was like, we're on.
Right. Can you imagine what goodwill we'd have if we just forgave like an entire generation's debt? Like for what? So Betsy DeVos can have more money? You know what I mean? Really, greedy elders.
I'm joking. Yeah,
right?
I mean, there is a legitimate capitalist system for forgiving debt. I just don't know the ins and outs of it.
Some parts of our society we could do better. Healthcare, education.
You can forgive debt if you do something good with your life, like
a give back or something.
Because teachers don't make any money.
It's a good idea.
Give them a complete great opportunity,
or go serve maybe your military or healthcare or something.
Yeah. And by the way, John McCain had written that bill with Ted Kennedy, and we almost did it. Mm. And it was universal service so that you didn't have to go into the military. You could teach. You could do all these things, and you'd get paid a stipend, but you would get your student loan forgiven. And I will tell you, with everything that we need to do in this world, I would love to see a group of volunteers who got paid a stipend go and try to reunite the kids with their families.
That's a great idea, actually.
I think there's lots of money being raised to do stuff
there
like
is.
That. Yeah,
there
I think
is.
That's sort of happening. So,
yeah, definitely.
All right, ladies, I've got to wrap this up. I really appreciate you spending time
great.
With me. It's been my
so
privilege
fun.
And so fun and so important. And I hope people will download Fight Back with Barbara Boxer. You can get it at iTunes and Podcast One. Follow Barbara at Barbara Boxer. Follow Nicole at Nicole Boxer. Get the films. I'm assuming they're available like usual places.
Absolutely. Netflix, iTunes.
The Invisible War and then The Hunting Ground, right? Yeah. And are you working on one now, I imagine?
I'm working on the Barbara Boxer doc. We'll see how that goes. There's some baggage.
I'm trying to write the ending.
And what's it just from
I
your,
don't know. Just
she lives in the
she
end.
She never gives up. She lives.
What is next for Barbara Boxer?
Well, I'm doing this podcast with Nicole,
which is a joy to work
with your kid.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
You know, after all the issues with kids, and then you wind up as grown-ups, and you say, you know, we can do something special together. I enjoy it. And I do some work with my son as well. So that's just a joy. I also give speeches all over the country, and I've debated Newt Gingrich, and I've debated Karl Rove, and it's been very interesting.
Fun.
That and
helping
Nicole
lots of candidates this cycle too.
And I have a PAC that I volunteer for, which is raising money for other people. And Nicole and I have a very exciting development deal with FX.
On my God! Congratulations!
Yeah, it's very exciting.
That's cool.
About
a
woman
network.
Who runs for Congress. Surprise!
Network.
Surprise!
Gary, you have anything for these guys?
Come on, Gary.
This has been excellent.
But you're closer to the age group that I was sort of trying to speak on behalf of. Anything that rang true or untrue or different for you?
I think that the age group that you're talking about, I think I fall slightly outside.
No, you are. You are. But
by like about 5 minutes.
But you're close to them.
Yeah, I work with a lot. I work with people in that age group.
Am I misrepresenting how they are?
No, I think that a lot of it's a little confusing to me because when I was growing up, you know, the college thing was very valued. It was what you did, and it was, you know, you go to college, you get a better job, X, Y, Z, and that's
How about the Me Too thing, the Me Too conversation? That's where I was really trying to represent.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. The Me Too thing's hard for me. I consider myself very lucky that I didn't end up in any jerky behavior. You know, I look back now and I
– No, because it was reinforced.
Right. It was a different kind of world. Luckily, I didn't have a lot of luck with the ladies, so I didn't have a lot of opportunity.
I don't believe that for a minute.
Hey, I figured it out and I got married
I what do you call him, the position?
Officiated.
I officiated his wedding.
How's
that? Extremely.
You could have gotten Barbara Boxer or Nicole Boxer to do it if you waited a few months. A lot of the young guys around here, are they expressing that anxiety that I was seeing on the college campuses and stuff?
Yeah, you know, it's – I think in the guys that are probably 7, 8 years or younger than me.
Yeah.
But the guys my age, I think that – luckily, most of the guys my age are kind of married and beyond that now.
Yeah.
But I do feel that my life would have been radically different if I was born 5 years later.
So they're having a different experience now.
I think so.
Which is good and bad.
It is good and bad. And I hope that 10 years from now, you know, or less, maybe it will be just way more good than
bad. Yeah, yeah.
Way more good.
Right now, I think there's a mix.
All right. Fair enough. Well, I'm a pumpkin. I got to run out of here. But you guys, thank you for joining.
I know
you have a tard
so
out,
much.
Too. We appreciate anything else we need to mention on the way out the door?
I think we're good. We're happy.
We're good.
We loved it. We enjoyed it.
Next time, can we come back and do some therapy?
like some couples therapy? Done and done.
No,
we'll see everybody, next time.
Therapy next time.
For calling times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's DRDREW Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the swinging sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com. All conversation and information exchanged during the participation in the Dr. Drew Podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction. Nothing on these podcasts supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the podcast or drdrew.com.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money.